Welcome to Series 3 of the Social Care Podcast, Sharing Stories, with me, David Bagnall, also known as Baggy, and Audrey Moore.
We are delighted to be back with the third series, sharing stories from interesting people in the social care world for the benefit of those working in and studying social care.
In this series, we will be chatting to a number of interesting guests and a range of diverse topics such as the changing face of social care as a result of regulation, working in the homeless services, and much more.
We'll also be collaborating with Social Care Ireland at their annual conference and chatting with the keynote speakers. You might know this already, but we're huge advocates of networking within social care. We'd encourage everyone to embrace any opportunities they get to meet and chat with more people in the sector. In social care, we never stop learning. And you may not know this, but Baggy and I are both back in college doing different courses. Today's guest is Edel Walsh. Edel is a student and exam coach. She's worked in academia for over 10 years, and she's passionate about supporting students through their academic journey. She uses her knowledge and experience of being a student, lecturer, and examiner, and she coaches students to reach their academic potential. She supports students with their academic success, personal development, and well-being for study and exams. And we thought it would be a really special episode to have Edel come and talk to us, not just for ourselves, but because we know that there's an awful lot of students who listen to this podcast.
How are you doing, Edel? Lovely to meet you.
I'm great, Baggy. Thanks for having me.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do, just to give the listeners a brief intro into yourself?
Absolutely. And thanks so much for having me, and Baggy and Audrey. So I am, as Audrey said, I am a student and exam coach, and I work with students from all walks of life, supporting them through their academics. Really, I suppose how I got into this whole space is I'm an accountant, so quite different to social care, but I'm an accountant and I did my professional accountancy exams many, many moons ago. And it wasn't the most pleasant of journeys for me, you know, working by day, studying by night, doing high pressurized exams. And I knew after, I suppose, a long period of time of studying that I wanted to support students who are studying, making the journey much more, I suppose, enjoyable for them, because learning is an amazing experience.
But if you start having issues yourself where you might be feeling stressed and whatever, when you're doing the exams yourself, how do you make the jump from being the person who, if you like, suffers with the nerves or the stress to going to being the person who helps people deal with the stress?
So I've been a student for many years. I've lectured, I've been an examiner, and now I'm a coach. So I kind of bring all that together and all of my skills and experience to support students through their own journey.
So many, many people who work in social care, or many people who are studying social care, are also working in social care at the same time. As a lecturer myself, I've noticed that managing your time, managing your workload can be very difficult for students. So what advice would you have for those people about workload management?
Yeah, that's such a big one, Audrey. When you're working and studying, it is so hard to, I suppose, get everything and prioritize everything. For me, I suppose step one is planning, okay? Getting a real bird's eye view of just even your week. Okay, to get a bird's eye view of the week ahead. What are your lectures that you have to attend? What's your workload like? What are your personal commitments? You know, be it family commitments, be, you know, your extracurricular activities. So at the start of every week, get a bird's eye view of what the week looks like. You don't want it to be like a straitjacket, say, I'm going to plan every second of the day, because that causes stress. So a bird's eye view of the week. And then when it comes to your daily plans, so I'm a great believer in planning. And again, you don't want it to feel like a straitjacket, but look at your day, look at your lectures. How many, let's say, you know, maybe is it a half an hour you're allocating to your study? Is it 2 hours? Whatever it may be. But when you sit down to do your study, again, planning. The key here, I think, Audrey, is for each study session that you have a little learning goal for yourself. What do I want to achieve out of this hour that I'm setting aside for myself for today? So by setting yourself a learning goal, in a sense, you're holding yourself to account. because I suppose your time is so limited, when you do sit down to do a little bit of study, you want to make it count. So for me, planning, setting out your learning goal at the start of your study session, and then I am a huge believer in reflection, okay? After every study session, ask yourself two or three reflective questions. Always start with the positives. What went well with my study today? What could have gone better? And maybe what can I learn tomorrow, or what can I do tomorrow to make it that little bit better than today? So, as I said, planning and goal setting. When you do then sit down to do your study session, again, if it's an hour, 2 hours, whatever it may be, you now have your goal in place. But how can we, and again, we're living in a world of social media and phones. Like when my students come to me, Audrey, the biggest distraction that they have is phones. So again, if you're going to be really intentional, you know, how can you add friction to your distractions to ensure that you get the best out of your study sessions? So a piece of research was carried out on three sets of students, where one set of students had a phone in front of them while they were studying. Another set of students had a phone, let's say, in their bag, but still in the study environment. And the students then that had the phone outside of the room while they were studying. And again, no surprise here, I think, that the students that did most well in the exams was when the phone was outside of the room. So really trying to manage those distractions is key as well when you're sitting down to do your study.
Absolutely. I have to put my phone out of the room if I'm studying or reading or doing an essay or anything like that. But you have to be really conscious of it, don't you? You really have to be conscious of what you're doing and not just passively.
Absolutely. And that's really hard. Our mind wanders, you know, and you say, oh, I'm going to sit down now and do 2 hours of productive study. Well, our brains can't really do that. You know, that's a long time. So I'm a firm believer in, I'm sure you've heard of it, the Pomodoro technique when you're studying.
Tell us about that.
What that is it's working for 25 minutes, really deep, focused work. And then you're taking, say, a 5 minute break. Okay, so work for 25 minutes, you take your break. So in a sense, you're kind of bargaining with yourself, saying, okay, if I do some deep focus, maybe reading or research or whatever it may be for 25 minutes, then I can look forward to my 5 minute break. But again, I would kind of, going back to the phone piece, Audrey, I'd say on that 5 minute break, to really try and avoid the phones. What we want in that 5 minute break is to give our brains a rest. And if you go to your phone, what's going to happen? You're going to start scrolling through LinkedIn or Instagram, and you're getting all these dopamine hits, and your brain is like, wow, this is amazing. And then you have to go back to your books in 5 minutes. And then your brain is like, oh God, this isn't as exciting as the phone. So ideally for that 5 minute break, you're taking a productive, deep break. So that is, you know, maybe sitting in silence, listening to music, getting a breath of fresh air, whatever it may be, but really giving your brain that rest it needs to go back and do another 25 minutes then afterwards.
I have to say, back when I was doing the degree, I used to sit and have the telly on and the laptop on my lap when I was doing my stuff. And my wife was doing her degree at the same time, and she had to be in the front room on a desk, peace and quiet. And I worked really well in that. I knew I should have been doing the kind of thing that you're saying, but I could just never, even when I was back in Stone Age, when I was doing my Leaving Cert, I still had like music on and the distraction. I felt I needed that kind of stuff, but I know I shouldn't have been doing it. But something that might contradict things for some people is that when you're in classes now and they're using things like Miro and using your phone to share thoughts and stuff on the screen. So you might have a laptop in front of you and then you have your phone as well. So I think students are getting used to multitasking with technical stuff. You know, I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying it's creeping in more and more. And I find that I'm using that kind of stuff on what I'm doing at the moment. I'm doing it on Zoom, but I also have my phone out because they want you to send items to Miro and that, and you're there, so you're kind of going back and forward.
Technology can be a blessing and a curse for studying, because like if you want to know a piece of information or who said a certain quote or what was that quote exactly, you know, you literally have all that information at your fingertips. But at the same time, it is such a distraction. I really find it. But I just thought of another tip that I used to do when I was studying for my master's, and it was during COVID times. So, you know, it was very easy to get distracted and it was hard to motivate myself at times to sit down and do stuff. But what I used to tell myself, I used to kind of tell myself a little lie. I'd say, could I do 5 minutes? Could I do 5 minutes of reading this or 5 minutes of writing, 5 minutes of transcribing, whatever I was doing. And I used to tell myself, yes, I can do 5 minutes. And sometimes I'd sit down and that 5 minutes turned into an hour, which is great. And other times I might sit down and that 5 minutes would only be 10 minutes, but that was okay. I was giving myself permission and it seemed to work quite well then. Have you heard of that kind of thing?
Absolutely. And I love it. Okay. So you've kind of reminded me of another piece there, Audrey. So like you're bargaining with yourself and you're just saying, you know what, this is just 5 minutes. So there's a bit of psychology involved there. Mm. But another thing that you kind of brought to my mind there is you're sitting down to do a piece of work and you're like, oh, there's one piece of work here that I love and I love doing the research on this. There's another piece, you know, a piece of study or a particular module that you're doing and you hate it. So in general, what happens is you'll do the one that you love because you're going to feel good about yourself and you're going to feel productive. And then by the end of the study session, you've allocated a half an hour to the one that you really don't like. You say, oh, I'm too tired. I'm not going to bother doing it. And that subject or module or piece of research or whatever it may be continues to be put on the long finger. So there's another really good tool. There's a book out there you might have heard of by a guy called Brian Tracy, and it's called Eat the Frog.
Oh, yeah.
So there's lots of different tips and tricks in this book, but Eat the Frog is do the hard stuff first. When you're setting up your timetable, if you can do that piece of work that you're really avoiding, that you're procrastinating on, do that first and then leave the nice subject to the end so you can kind of, inverted commas, look forward to doing that piece of work. So you'll feel good about yourself when you've got that hard topic done and then you can kind of look forward to the rest of the topics and subjects that you've done. So yeah, it's a really nice one. So Eat the Frog, small little book, but it's a good little read.
I think you can get it for free on YouTube, listen to it for free.
Yeah, and he himself, Brian Tracy, there's loads of YouTube, let's say, tips and tricks and tools out there. But yeah, no, it's quite a good one.
So going back to the workload, mm-hmm. So a lot of social care students would have a variety of work to be done kind of around this time of year. They might have group work projects, they might have presentations, essays, projects, and they might be, we'll come back to the exams, but they might have exams on the horizon as well. What advice would you give to people who have so many different things kind of in the not too far away future to manage?
Yeah. When you look at all the things that you've listed out there, Audrey, that can certainly feel overwhelming. You're like, oh my God, I've got this assignment, this exam, this piece of group work, and I have to work. When you look at it as an overall, that is overwhelming. And I talked earlier about learning goals, but there's another type of goal, and it's a performance goal. So a performance goal is get your course, pass your exams, get whatever, you know, grade you are looking for. But when you think about that performance goal, it can certainly lead to overwhelm. So I am all for bringing things back, okay? Bringing things back to small, manageable learning goals. So the key in a case like this is, so you've got a jam-packed day in front of you. You know you've got all these deadlines coming up, okay? Stress can start creeping in when you think of the workload, okay? Just ask yourself this question. What is the one small step that I can make today to push the dial on my goals? Okay, so what is the one small thing that I can do to help me make a little bit of progress here? Because when you think about it all, it gets really overwhelming. So bite-sized chunks, you know, small, manageable chunks just to help move yourself forward.
That's brilliant. And what about that student? And sometimes we might have been that student or we might know that student who has gotten to here in the year and has maybe buried their head in the sand and hasn't done a whole lot, or maybe for whatever circumstances they've had in their life, they know themselves that they haven't put in the work and that they're struggling. What should they do you think?
What I would say to that student, Audrey, is it is never too late. So you might have come to this stage of the year and a lot has gone on and you may have missed a lot, but it is never too late to start. Even if we're a week before exams here, it is never too late. I would say hone in on your mindset. Because if you're telling yourself, I can't do this, look at my workload, I'm never going to get that done, that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
But if you tell yourself you can't do something, more often than not, that becomes true. But if you tell yourself you can do something, more often than not, that also becomes true. So for that student, be careful of that self-talk. What are you saying to yourself? Are you saying to yourself, well, I'm never going to pass this. It's too late. I may as well just give up. Or, you know what? It is whatever date it is. I've got X amount of weeks toward the exams. I can do this. I still have time. So it's all about mindset and self-talk.
Something that I picked up on in my own time going through exams and courses and speaking to groups of students is that it's very hard not to compare yourself to other people in your group or your class and trying to set goals that other people are setting for themselves and stepping back and being a bit realistic about what you actually want from your course compared to what they want from it. You know, like as say, some people go into management training courses because they want to be CEO of an organization. Other people want to go in, they want to be a house or a unit manager, and that's where they're setting their sights. Do you find that a common thing with the people you deal with?
Hugely common, Baggy. It is hugely common. I have students coming to me and the first thing that they say is, well, my colleague or, you know, my friend, they're doing 5 hours of study and they're doing, you know, X and I'm doing Y. We are all different, okay? My 5 hours of study that I might be doing might equate to half an hour study for you. So it's easy to say, I think, but again, it's looking at yourself, okay? Looking at what's in front of you. We all have different commitments. You know, we all have different pressures. So to look and see, you know, well, this person is doing X, Y, and Z, and I'm only doing A, B, and C, rein that back in, okay? What can I control here? What you can control is how you study, when you study, where you study. What your friend or colleague is doing, that's their own business. So you have to accept what they're doing, but really bring it back to yourself and look at what is in your circle of control, okay? And all those things that I just mentioned are within your circle.
And sometimes as well, the lecturers or teachers have expectations that everyone in the class has the same level, say like of technology information skills or literacy skills or something, and they just give out a general edict, you know, this is what you have to do for next week, so go and do it.
I think as well though that lecturers, they want you to do well, they yes. want you to pass their course, and if somebody's having a struggle in some area, whether it's the technology or whether it's that they don't maybe understand something, or that for whatever reason, they just haven't studied the material all year, I think they'd rather you come and talk to them and let them know that you're struggling rather than struggling alone or dropping out. And there are always options. There's always options, whether it's to repeat or whether it's to do an extra piece of work, like your lecturer will be able to let you know. So go to them and talk to them is the advice that I would give. Anyway, I'd rather see a student come to me and talk to me and let me know that they're struggling than just have radio silence and then having to fail them.
Yeah, I agree 100% with you, Audrey. And again, when I was lecturing, sometimes that's great feedback for the lecturer. So, you know, talk as if, you know, everyone is on the same level playing field. And just as you said there, Baggy, there might be people that have different, you know, I suppose, abilities when it comes to technology and so on. And as a lecturer, sometimes we make assumptions. But when a student comes up to us, either in class or after class, and says, you know what, I'm not at the races here, that's really good feedback for a lecturer as well. So don't be afraid to go and talk to them. They will always signpost you in a direction to get a little bit more support.
Yeah.
But like I still say, like, I'm just heading for 60. I'm doing this job donkey's years. I still have to go to people and say, something new has come up that I don't understand, or can you explain this? Or sometimes I just need it in everyday language and not academic language, you know, just the bullet points. And then it gets through to me that way. But I mean, this is a skill that they can learn as a student, but you take it out into your general life. Once you get used to saying to people, I'm not sure how this is going, can you give me help?
Yeah.
You can learn to ask for help in any area of your life.
I agree totally. And people like being asked you know, to help other people in general. So, you know, the recipient or the helper is probably going to feel good about giving the help as well. But there's definitely a little bit of a vulnerability as well, isn't there? You know, that I'm not understanding this here and I need help. But go for it, because 99% of the time people are more than willing to give that help.
Yeah, absolutely. This podcast is sponsored by Trust Social Care Consultancy for the support and development of social care workers. Find out more about how we can support you or your team by visiting trustconsultancy.ie. The link is also in the show notes. Now, back to the podcast. And also, important to remember that people learn differently as well. Some people are visual learners. Some people learn really well from listening to the lecture. Some people learn really well from reading the material. And some people, again, you know, learn from doing. So that's why the practical element of social care is so good, because you don't just learn the theories and the information in class. You get to go out and put it into practice. And it's really, really beneficial. I've seen lots of students who maybe we're just passing with the theory and the lecture stuff and the academic stuff, but then they go out into placement and they flourish, absolutely flourish. And those people might learn better by doing. So, so but don't write stuff off. Don't compare yourself to other people.
Haven't we all sat in a class at some time and said, what's the point in this?
Mm-hmm.
And then you sit down in some area with someone with a cup of tea and just an off-the-cuff chat, and they say something and you go, oh, no, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
Oh, it depends, like Audrey is saying, it's how you hear it, where you hear it, how you engage with something, and then somebody makes it meaningful for you.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that's what you do with the study, and that just take it, look, this is what you need to do. It may be long and boring and all that, but if you make it into smaller pieces and do it this way, it'll build up. I suppose it's like going to the gym.
Oh, 100%. That is such a good analogy, you know.
Not that I've been to the gym. I wouldn't know anything about that whatsoever.
But it's like anything, you know, and if I could give another tip here, you know, and to go back to what you said, Audrey, some people are visual learners, some are auditory, some like doing. We all lean towards, I suppose, a particular way of learning, but try them all out. That's what I would say. Even if you're a visual learner, you know, try the auditory, you know, try the doing, the kinesthetic. But going back to Baggy's point, then it's like, you know, if you want to build a muscle, what are you going to do? You're going to go to the gym, okay? You're going to keep going back to the gym until you reach your goal. The same applies for learning. It's repetition, okay? Keep going over it and going over it and going over it until it's embedded in your brain. But you really, truly, deeply understand what you're learning. And just as Baggy said there, you're sitting down having a cup of coffee with someone. And if you can explain what you're learning to that person in plain and simple English, well, then you've got it. So that's the key. It's keep it simple. And if you're testing yourself on your learning, can you explain it to a Joe Soap on the street that knows absolutely nothing about social care and they understand it? Well, then you're winning. That's the key there.
So there'll be exams coming up now soon for a lot of people. And I know that the stress of exams, I never coped well with the stress of exams. Thankfully, I don't have any this year, just quite a few assignments. But for anybody who is doing exams, what can they do to help themselves manage that stress?
I think, Audrey, the first thing I'd say is when you hear the word stress, it automatically kind of conjures up something negative. But a little bit of stress is okay. I always say to my students, it shows that you care. It's when the stress starts impeding your study, that's when you need to kind of take a step back. So timing is everything when it comes to the stress of an exams. And I always compare it to like a volcano, you know. When the volcano is dormant, everything is lovely and calm and we're all good. When the smoke starts to appear and the lava starts to, you know, it's starting to rumble a little bit, that's the warning signs that our stress levels are, I suppose, increasing. And then when the volcano erupts, well, then we're full on panic mode. So ideally for those students that are doing exams, if you can recognize when the volcano is starting to bubble, okay, I'm getting stressed here now, what can I do to help myself? So you're going back to self-regulation, trying to rebalance. And, you know, all of the key things is going back, looking after yourself, breathing. Okay, so incorporate breathing and breath work into your study routine is something that you will Always have on the day of the exam, you are in control of your breath. Your breath will bring you from that panicked state into that calmer state. So really practicing your breathing.
Are you talking about maybe 5 minutes of just deep breathing before you study, and then you could do that when you go into the exam hall as well to help regulate yourself? Is that what you're talking about?
Absolutely. So when you're looking at your study plan for the day, at the start, incorporate not even 5 minutes, you know, 1 minute of deep abdominal breathing. And then if you're, let's say, for example, you're practicing past exam questions, again, do a little square breath. So breathe in for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, out for 4 seconds, and hold for 4 seconds. Every time you read the requirement of a question, you can afford to give yourself 16 seconds in an exam, because it will just bring you, it'll just give you more clarity of thought. And as well, when you breathe, there's more oxygen going to your brain. If there's more oxygen going to your brain, you're going to think clearly. So even if you feel that panic setting in the exam, you know, studying for the exam or in the exam itself, take a step back. I can feel the volcano rumbling here. I'm going to do some deep abdominal breathing. There's lots of other different methods, but that would be my favorite. But again, and my mother always used to say to me going into exam and into an exam, you know, just breathe and it'll all be fine. And she was right. But again, if you just start breathing when you're in the exam, your body doesn't really, you know what you're trying to do. So incorporate it into your study routine. You know, a minute at the start, you're practicing past exam questions, you know, breathe as you read the requirements. So then if panic sets in when you're sitting in the exam, you start your breathing and your body knows, okay, I know I'm feeling a little bit stressed, but I'm going to go from the stressful state into calm so I can carry on with my exam.
That's a really good tip, because one thing that I do notice is that students misread the exam questions and they start answering a completely different question, but maybe it's the panic that sets in at the start of the exam.
It really is. And I've corrected tens of thousands of exam questions. And when you see that student, you can see the panic written down. If it's time, you can just see it. They start repeating what's in maybe the case study and they're not answering what is in the requirement. So breathe, read the requirement, breathe again if you have to, and look at the requirement. And in the requirement of the question as well, there might be two or three questions in there. So by breathing, you're getting that clarity of thought and you're seeing all the different, I suppose, elements to that question.
I think I'm terrible for other people in the exam room. I was a nightmare for a week before the exam, not sleeping, couldn't eat. But as soon as I sat down in the exam room, I looked around and I saw how equally stressed other people were. And then it was like I was in the eye of the storm and I was really calm doing the work. It was just all the preempting it and, you know, the expectations. But when you realize everybody's as stressed as yourself when you get in there, that was my, I suppose, say, safe space.
Yeah.
When, like, I was looking at other people doing all the work through classes and assignments and stuff like that and seeing how well they were doing. And I was doing okay myself and all that. But you still, as I was saying earlier, you still compare and contrast what's going on. But the leveler for me was that everybody in the exam room was equally as preoccupied with how things were going to go. And I was saying, well, if they're all the same, I'm okay.
Absolutely. And another tip I would give to students on that is a lot of my clients would come to me and say, well, it's actually my friends and my colleagues, they're actually stressing me out when they talk about the exams. Avoid them. Avoid them for the week before the exams if you can. If that's something that's going to stress you out, avoid it. So really, I suppose, dig into, you know, where your stressors are. And again, if it's, oh my God, look at this, you know, big thing that I need to do. I've got to do this big exam. Break it down. Break it down. It's like going back to what we said in the earlier conversation. Break it down to small manageable chunks. So one small thing that I can do for myself today to push the dial. So that, your breath work, avoiding people and doing something nice for yourself. You know, you need that rest and recovery as well. It can't be all study and work. And when students say to me, I'm actually going to give up my hobbies coming up to the exams, don't. That's your lifeline. You know, keep all of that up. Maybe the week of the exams, that's okay. But no, your hobbies, your sports, anything that, you know, you do outside of work and study and family life, keep that up. You know, it's really, really important.
Something that, like yourself and Audrey, I could ask you both the same question. When Audrey is talking about going and doing her other work, I always wonder, what does the responsibility feel like when you're in a room or with a group of people who are really stressed or really preoccupied, and you have the responsibility to try and get them from that to a base? Like, I know it's like in social care when you have a client who is in the height of it and you need to bring them back down again. But I couldn't imagine working with a group that are like stressed out to their eyeballs and then trying to tell them that everything is going to be all right because they're all so different.
I think it's very like being a social care worker, actually being a lecturer, in that you're trying to manage expectations, you're trying to be as gentle with people as possible, and the communication piece, because if people are stressed, they don't often take in what you're telling them. So you have to check that understanding, or maybe say it again, maybe convey it in a different way. But yeah, I've been there so many times, exams, assignments, I know what it's like. So I do try and be as gentle with people as possible, but the work still needs to be done, unfortunately. There's marks and standards.
Yeah, the work needs to be done. And sometimes, you know, I'd often say to students, just think of the bigger picture. Why are you doing this? Because you want your qualification, and that can help sometimes as well. But I think, you know, the common thread here is that everybody is different. You'll have two students sitting in the same class. One is really calm, cool as a breeze, and another is quite stressed. So it's knowing that everyone is different and we have all different tools and techniques that we can draw on to support ourselves.
And different assignments and stuff can cause different levels of anxiety in different people. You might have somebody who's actually fine with exams, but really struggles with presentation. They really might struggle with anxiety having to stand up in front of the class and give presentation or read off a board or speak about themselves. So, you know, like you said, everybody's different.
But I love the fact that when we were doing our degree, you had people who were like streets ahead with social policy and social history and whatever. And it came to doing art and drama, they were totally lost. It shows that people blossom in different areas, and it gives you a taste when you're in college for what you want to do, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the great thing about social care. The social care degrees, it's so diverse, isn't it?
Yeah. And drama was a bit challenging for a lot of people because when you have to be a bit abstract. But then that's kind of what we do. Like when we have clients that are in stress situations and you need to do the role play with them and kind of find the right story to tell them. And I mean story as in pull together information, you know, to put it into a story for them to get them back to what they are. That's really what you're doing. You're doing something abstract.
There's nothing that you'll do on a social care course that you won't apply somehow in your work. Isn't that right? Like everything you do, whether it's the theory, whether it's learning about history, it all applies. It's just finding out how is it meaningful.
But even listening to us here now with Adele, somebody may listen to this who was working in a house or a unit with a young person who's having stress issues with the junior cert or the leaving cert and really don't know how to do it. And then all of a sudden you'll say something and they'll kind of go, oh yeah. And when we were setting up this podcast, it was for that reason, to get information like this out and share it in their own words. And yeah, the way you say it will ring true with somebody and they'll take it. And even if it's only one, it's worthwhile doing this piece of work for, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Adele, I've absolutely loved having you on today. Is there any final words of wisdom that you can share with ourselves or with anyone who's listening who has a huge amount of work on their plate or exams looming on the horizon?
Oh, my top tip in particular, so we've talked about workload, okay? And I talked about repetition when it comes to learning, okay? But if I could give any top tip is when you're studying, test yourself, okay, and really keep testing yourself. So you can read, okay, you can read research and you can read your notes and read your, you know, your books forever, but test yourself to hold yourself to account. So if you are reading, let's say, a manual or you're reading a chapter in a book, close the book, do a brain dump, challenge your brain, okay, because that will hold yourself to account. And it will show you, well, what did I actually learn when I was reading that chapter? And it might be loads or it might be absolutely nothing. So challenge your brain. It's going to feel difficult. But that's the key to it with learning success, Audrey, is it's called retrieval practice, you know, pulling the information out of your brain. So brain dumps, you know, practicing past exam questions, doing, again, when you're reading, as I said, doing a brain dump, it's also called a blank page retrieval. So it's hard, but go for it. And that will be the key to success.
But sure, that's the whole point. It has to be hard or we won't learn. That's brilliant. And I loved what you said earlier about being reflective on your learning as well. And we're big into reflective practice and how it can really accelerate your learning, whether you're studying or in social care. So I loved that you said that.
Well, listen, it was lovely to have you here, Adele. As I say, every time we do this, I learn lots of little things that are put together, and I hope it makes my work and my practice better. And it's lovely to hear people who are helping our students and our future social care workers in getting to where they want to be. So thanks very much for joining us.
And thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for joining Baggy and I for this week's episode of the Social Care Podcast with Adele Walsh. To find out more about Adele and the work she does, check out the show notes on this episode. We also wish all the best to anyone studying at the moment and hope you got something from this conversation. Please feel free to pass the link along to anyone you know who might benefit from the tips offered. Next week, our guest Miriam Barty will be chatting to us about a new and different type of care organisation here in Ireland. You won't want to miss it. Click the follow button on this podcast so you never miss an episode. Take care.